Hi, good afternoon everyone. This is Rajiv Khanna for immigration.com. Today is June 18th, 2009. We are getting together here for a community conference. This is a free conference where we will answer questions already posted on the forums on immigration.com. If time permits, I may be able to answer any new questions. Normally, if past experience is any guide, we don't have time left at the end of the conference. Before we get started, I want you folks to realize this call is being recorded. Anybody who does not wish for their conversation to be recorded should hang up. Also, keep your identities confidential. Since these calls are publicly available, you can make up a name when you talk with me, Tom, Dick, Harry, whatever, it doesn't really matter. So with that, let me get started. I have a list of questions here. Before I begin on the list, there is a question on DV, lottery, reverse series. Sir, I apologize, but I don't deal with those visas at all. Very early, we decided that these visas don't require a lawyer, so we have almost never gotten involved with a DV visa. You may have to check this with somebody else. First question, B. Chamaraj, H1 question. I-140 approved. Current employer... H-1B expires December 2009. Planning to apply for H-1B extension in end of June. But my project with my current client is getting over by the end of June. How is it going to affect my extension? Well, INS has become fairly sticky about having a project in hand before they will give you an extension. So if you're not able to get a letter from the end client, talking about the length of project, etc., you may not be able to get an H-1 extension. If I do an H-1B transfer to a new company, will I get 3 more years of H-1B? Yes, you should. You should get a total of 3 years of H-1B, counting your 6th year as well as the 3 years you are allowed to get after I-140 approval. So you should be able to do your 3-year H-1 approval, even though you go with a company other than the one who filed the I-140 for you. Is it okay to go to India in August after applying for extension? I have a valid H-1B stamp until December 2009. Yes, you can do that, Chen. You can travel while the extension request is pending. As always, you must discuss the case in detail with your H-1 lawyers. Next question is from G-O-U Secris. Approved I-140 showing online that case got transferred. His case or her case was filed at TSC and later transferred to NSC and got approved in May. After a week, it now shows it was transferred to Lincoln, Nebraska, that is pending for standard processing. Okay, that doesn't make any sense. If the I-140 has already been approved, why would the I-140 be transferred? I don't understand myself. I think it is some kind of an error somewhere. Either the approval was sent in error or the online status is wrong. Something is incorrect. So you may want to either go through your congressman's office, through American Immigration Lawyers Association, which your lawyer can do, or you can try making an InfoPass appointment and see if you can get some sense of what's going on. Okay? If your employer withdraws the approved I-140, does that affect your 485? And the answer is yes. If there is no I-140, there is no I-485. Is it possible to do AC-21? Yes. Now things are different. Even if they withdraw and you're doing an AC-21, withdrawal of the I-140 does not affect your ability to do an AC-21. So the answer to the first question is, if my I-140 is approved, 485 pending more than 180 days, and then the I-140 is withdrawn, I have no other job in hand, is 485 gone? Yes. But if I have the same or similar job, can I save my 485? Sure. Just send in a letter, you'll be fine. Okay, I've told you what action to take, so go ahead and follow through. Naveen 256 wants to know about I-140 denial based upon ability to pay. Indian national trying to retain the priority date in my EB-2 case. Worked for an employer from Jan through May 2007, Jan 2014, May 2014, for 3 years. Had filed for LC, which got approved. Moved to employer C in June 2007, then filed the I-140 with the previous employer's letter. A new LC was also filed with employer C in 2008. It got approved in March 2009. I was waiting for the results from the I-140 of the company B to file the I-140 with company C, and did not file a new I-140. The I-140 with the prior employer got denied, the B. I had 30 days and I filed an MTR. I don't understand why did you file an MTR instead of an appeal. But in any case, that's your attorney's choice. Okay, the MTR has been denied first week of this month. The first H-1 start date is 27th Jan 2004. I plan to file for By the way, the MTR denial, you should file an appeal or something, because while an appeal is pending, you can keep getting H-1 extension. An MTR gives you no right for extension. That's one thing it's my pet peeve against all lawyers who file an MTR instead of an appeal. I don't understand what is the advantage of that. You should always file an appeal. An appeal automatically becomes an MTR as well as an appeal. The way it works is if you file an MTR, it goes to the officer who decided your case, who then looks at the case again, decides whether or not they have made a mistake. If they decide they have not made a mistake, the case gets denied. And that's the end of it. That's for MTR. But if you file an appeal, the case goes back to the same officer. He looks at the case. He decides whether or not he's made a mistake. If he thinks he has not made a mistake, he is required to forward the case to the higher officer. That's much better than having just the case denied. Second reason is appeal gives you rights. There are other rights that it gives you, for example, getting H-1 extension. And the third reason is an MTR has no time limit, whereas in an appeal, when they look at the case again, they have to decide within 60 days whether or not they are going to approve or deny the case. So I have never understood what is the reason for people to be filing, lawyers to be filing MTRs. I can understand. There are cases like 485 where you don't have the right to appeal. You have to file an MTR. That's fine. 9 cases out of 10, you should be filing appeal, not MTR. You should file an appeal against, I don't think there is anything you can do. You can also refile the I-140. But you've got to protect your right to keep getting H-1 extensions. I can't get into a lot more detail than this, I can tell you this, go talk with your lawyers or go talk with somebody who's a competent lawyer who can tell you. There is no doubt in my mind, an appeal should have been filed. It may be too late to file an appeal now. You can think about it. But you can always refile the I-140 through company B. When that gets, while that I-140 is pending, you can keep getting H-1 extensions. And once that I-140 also gets denied, you can then file an appeal. While the appeal is pending, which is a good 2 years, you can keep getting H-1 extensions. Meantime, your other labor certification also kicks in. You should file the I-140 through that as well. Next question is RAGS 1, changing visa from L-1 to H-1 with 485 pending. I'm currently on L-1A. They applied for green card. I-140, 45 were filed. I-140 was approved. So it's been pending, 45 has been pending more than 1 year. If there is a layoff, does the application stay valid? You should file an AC-21. L-1 people are allowed to do AC-21. Previously there was some doubt about that, but INS has made it very clear. L-1 people, if they get a same or similar job somewhere else, they can also do AC-21. Would it be safe to apply for an H-1B? You can do that as well. And what you are thinking of doing, just hold my H-1, that is illegal. If they have a job, certainly go start working for them. But there's no such thing as holding an H-1. That is illegal. Next question, Jack Callis. GC is filed in EB-2 category and I-140 is approved. H-1B I-94 petition expired on 2nd June and has filed for extension. Project is getting over by 24th June. Company number one, the current company doesn't have any project in this company. Okay. In between, I'm getting an offer from another company. They will transfer my H-1B, but the salary is on the lower side. I will not be able to continue my GC in EB2 category. Wait a minute. If your I-140 is already approved, has your 45 been filed? You didn't mention that. I'm assuming it wasn't filed. If it wasn't filed, at least you get the priority rate of the old case, no matter what you do, EB3 or EB2. Now, if I transfer my H-1B to second company and I don't start my green card process, I just leave it as it is. My question is, after 6 months, if I get a project with better salary at a different location, can I start my GC in EB2 at that time? Yes, because you are going to inherit the priority date of your earliest case. The I-140 is already approved. So whenever you start the green card, you will get the priority date of the first filing, which is great. If another company is ready to offer me a better job in 6 months, can I start my GC in EB2? Yeah, you can. You can. So it really is not a question of only, you know, you don't have to start the green card right away. Whenever you feel that you are getting enough salary that you could go through EB2, you can start. Next question is a very difficult one, and we've had these kind of cases. I think we've done about 6 of these cases. We got 5 approvals and 1 denial. What happens is, in typically these cases, there are 2 people, H1, H4. H1 is extended, but people forgot to do the H4 extension. Now what happens is the H4 holders, I-94 expires, and they become out of status and unlawfully present because the I-94 expired. And in this case, like Prabhu FT has said, his wife was unlawfully present for 13 months. So she went to India a couple of times, came back, the mistake was never discovered. And now, last Wednesday, on June 10th, when they were doing pre-adjudication, they caught the unlawful presence. So they want to know what to do. Can we do a non-proton, etc., etc.? It's a very, very tough case, sir. It is not something I can tell you in a very brief period of time. But I'll try my best. See if you can talk with your lawyers and perhaps even have them listen to this conference. We've had, so far in my memory, like I said, 6 cases like that, 5 successes, 1 failure. The only difference between your case and these cases is that they contacted me early enough before traveling outside USA. I did not let them travel. Problem is, once you're outside USA, 310 bar has already attached. So that bar is a statutory bar. Even if INS wants to help you, at that point it becomes impossible for them to help you. So saving this case is going to be extremely difficult. The laws are all against you. But strange things have happened before. All these things about children and family being here may not be enough, but you can try. Typically, we charge sufficient amount of money for these cases. You asked how much does it cost. Well, every lawyer has their own fees. You could get the same thing done for, well, not the same thing, but an application like that filed for $500. Or typically, our fees are minimum $5,000 for correcting or trying to correct a situation like this, just for the H4 process. Okay? But again, I'm not encouraging you to contact us. I'm not even sure I can do anything for you since they have already traveled. But whoever your lawyer is, whoever gave you these advice, these pieces of advice about traveling, you should talk with them. Okay? It's a very, very tough case to save, but who knows? You can certainly try. There is also if I remember correctly, there is an exemption to the 310 bar if there is some kind of an extraordinary hardship to the U.S.-born children or the U.S. Indian children. You could probably try using that as well. So I'm sorry, Prabhu, I wish I could give you better guidance, but in the time that we have, this is the best I can do. Talk with your lawyers, see if they can do some kind of an exceptional hardship case, or a non-proton, which I think is very, very difficult. But in fact, the regulations don't even permit non-proton. But it's worth a shot. You can try. Next question is from Natasha. Natasha says, I have an H-1B, received firm EAD, then changed my job on H-1. I-140 was canceled before any approval. I then got laid off. So now applied for H-1 transfer. Parents are going to get you as well. If parents get citizenship and you are in one of the backlog categories, which is very likely, for example, if there is a four-year delay, you cannot stay in USA. You will not get any work authorization, and you don't have any status. So if you have a backlog in your category, you can never, ever stay in USA, nor can you get an EAD right away. Really, your best bet is go ahead and have them apply for your green card, but bank upon your H-1 to maintain your status. Next question is NC Game. I'm currently on H-1 status, which expires on December 2010. I was wondering if it's possible to jump to EAD for 6 months, then jump back to H-1. Yes, it is possible. But when you go from EAD to H-1, you may have to step outside USA, get a visa stamp of H-1 and come back. Second question, by the way, this should be on my blog, I'm pretty sure. Second question, if a person has used 4.5 years of their H-1B and their I-140 is approved, can they renew their H-1 for 3 years or can they renew it for only 1.5 years? In my opinion, you should try for three. And I could be wrong, but as far as I remember, our office has been getting 3-year approval in these cases. The point is, I'm not sure if your lawyer is right or wrong. I think it's worth a shot. Maximum IMS can say, no, we're not going to give you 3, we'll give you 1.5. Practical answer, try it. I think it will work. You'll get 3 years. Next question is Cali Merrill. Traveling while H-4 extension is pending. Now, she is a Canadian citizen on H-4, left for Canada on June 6th, wanted to be back on June 25th. H-4 and H-1 are expiring June 30th. Husband's H-1 filed for H-1 extension, and H-4 extension was filed at the same time. Well, your old I-94 is valid till June 30th, so you can re-enter USA before June 30th anytime, no problem at all. I thought to re-enter US with my extension approval notice, but the 15-day period for the premium processing has expired. You can come back. If you come back before June 30th, you have no problem because you have the previous H-1 and H-4. The way it works is when you have just applied for an extension, you are able to come back into USA while the extension is going on. But if there's a change of status, then you can't travel. So if you were going from TN to H-1, and then you traveled outside and want to come back using the TN, you would have a problem. Well, you could use the TN, but your H-1 change of status would be denied. It's considered to be abandoned. But when there's an extension, you can just come back before June 30th, no problem. And even if there's only 5 days left, that's not a problem. If you want to come back on June 25th like you say you do, I don't see any problem. So no problem at all. Come back. You're fine. They have to let you back in. Next question, Psy4GC. I think Psy had some additional comments. I'm not sure if it was Psy, but let me just double check. Hi, Sai. I tried to unmute you. Let me try again. Sai, hello? Sai, press *6 on your telephone. Sai?
This is Sai.
Okay, this is your question, right?
Yeah, yes, this is my question. I'm able to hear you, but some reason.
Okay, no problem. Let me see if I can understand your situation. Okay. I-140 was approved January 22nd, 2009 with Company B. seventh year of H1 is ending July 2009. Current company B applied for H1 extension but denied based on old company A45, which is denied because of underlying I-140 denial. You didn't file an appeal against the I-140 denial?
Right. I applied the appeal on 140 and then that appeal was denied. Again, they asked me to provide an appeal one more time. I applied for that appeal also one more time. But they cashed my check and there is no receipt has been issued for that.
No, see, there is no appeal. There is an MTR here. That's what I don't understand. MTR gives you no right.
Yeah, first one, they tried the MTR and appeal. My lawyer also told the same thing. If it is not considered, they make it into the appeal. So after 9 months, they give a decision saying that, okay, we deny this one, but if we want to appeal, you can appeal it. So again, I send it for an appeal.
No. This is not the process. It looks to me that your lawyer did not apply for an appeal. They applied for an MTR. Waited 9 months, the MTR was denied, then they filed the appeal.
Right. So, I'm not sure. So, I already applied that one. Though they cashed my check, but they didn't even issue any receipt notice to us.
Well, what you can do is, let's take a look at your question.
Yeah.
Can I apply one more H1 extension in premium processing with the same company? You can try. If your appeal was timely filed, and I'm not even sure it was, but if your appeal was timely filed and it is still pending, which it appears it is, your checks were cashed, you can provide copies of the cashed checks and proof of mailing, give an affidavit of the lawyer that the case was sent. You should be able to get an H1 extension based upon that.
Right. This present question is that I am with a company B now, and company B got an I-140 approval, right?
Okay.
So they filed my H1. And they denied it. So again, they filed my MTR appeal now for the H1.
Wait. This is where everything is very confusing. Company B,
yes,
filed an I-140 for you.
Yes.
And it got approved. Why was the H1 denied?
Because they denied because based on saying that, okay, your 485 was denied in June 2016.
Yeah, but that's not the basis on which you are asking the H1.
Right, that's what my question. We didn't even ask anything about that. Because even in the cover letter, the employer mentioned that according to AC21, so. So this guy is already approved labor, approved 140. We are putting all the receipts.
Right.
He applied for the extension for 3 years.
Right.
So they didn't even look at that one. They simply sent me a denial notice saying that, okay, you're not eligible according to this because only 2 lines, your 485 is denied.
Well, the first thing the lawyer should have done is called the premium processing center. That's what we do. And say, you guys are screwing this up. Look what you're doing to my client. Okay, the big advantage of doing a premium processing case is
uh-huh.
that you can at least talk with somebody. You may not be able to talk with the person who decided the case, but at least if you yell and rant and rave long enough, they'll put you in through to a supervisor to whom you can explain the situation. Look, you guys are making an obvious mistake. My client is going to suffer. Guys, help us.
Right. But here he applied in a normal process in the January. We got the response in the...
You are out of status. If your H1 expired
uh-huh.
and you are still in USA, you are accruing unlawful presence. If the appeal or the MTR is denied, you could be subject to 3 or 10 year bar. This is a very risky procedure to follow.
Okay, so that's why it's present situation. Because
okay, what you need to do is call, even now they should call the premium processing center.
Okay, for the...
Okay. Yeah, for the H1. Say, you guys have made an obvious mistake. My client is entitled to an... You know, the funny thing is, these people are very... considerate if you can articulately put together your case for them. If you let INS know, look, you are making a mistake. We've had a couple of cases like this, and I didn't even have to get on the phone. People from my team were able to just, you know, call INS and explain the things to them, and they were able to get the notices corrected. It's not easy.
But Rajiv, here we didn't apply in the premium process. This was a regular process.
Okay, that's the problem. Now, regular, I can't say. You can try, you can still try going to the customer service center, but it's very, very difficult.
Right, but present situation, so what is your suggestion? Can I go for one more refiling H1?
Go for H1 refiling premium processing, absolutely.
With a present
and
company?
And ask INS to forgive your being out of status. It is for no fault of your own. You did everything under the book. You did everything according to law. and still you are out of status?
No, I'm still in the H1 till July 2000.
Oh, if you are in H1 till July, then there's no problem. Because if you're in H1 till July,
yes.
Once you file a timely extension, you have that 240-day rule protecting you. There is no 240-day rule for MTR. There is no such thing.
Okay, the because I filed...
The 240-day rule says this. If somebody on H1 files for an H1 extension within the time given to them,
okay,
within the life of their current H1,
right,
they have an automatic extension to continue working for 240 days or the date the case is decided, whichever is earlier.
Even though it is denied.
I mean, denied doesn't mean anything. You still have an H1.
Right, I have an H1, but my question is that we applied and it is denied. And
yeah,
we did
but that, they didn't take away your current H1. You're still on an H1.
Right, up to July, next month.
Same rule applies, no problem. File H1 premium processing. See,
one
that's
more.
Why I was so confused that these facts just didn't make any sense to me. Okay, and I don't blame you because the facts are kind of confusing.
Okay, so
if you apply from a different company, will my stay considered as legal? Yes. Can I continue to work? Yes. Is it safer applying H1 from some same company? I think it's both good.
Both
as
good.
Long as the companies have worked for you and they can prove they have worked for you, either
right.
way.
Right. I'm in the project team. Yeah.
I don't see any problem.
So both are same, equally same, equally
I think
safe.
Yes.
Yeah,
sir.
Okay.
Okay.
Right. Thank you very much, sir.
My pleasure. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Just a second, folks. I have to do some adjustments here.
Hello, Rajiv.
Yeah.
Oh, you hear me, right? I'm sorry. I missed it. I just want to add that info to you, and I've forgotten after talking to you. Actually, recently, in just last month, I saw that the old denied 485, they put back in pending, transferred and pending.
I don't know what that means. I won't wait. Because
okay.
INS does all sorts of things. Just go do what I just told you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Okay. Getting back on track, folks. Is it possible, this is K. Yuvaraj, is it possible to reinstate the withdrawn H-1B? No. No. Once an H-1B is withdrawn, you cannot withdraw the withdrawal. You have to refile the H-1. Whether you do it with a new employer, same employer, that's totally up to you. Blue India says, can a person on EAD work on 1099? Yes. Yes. But keep in mind one thing. When you have a green card going on, what you have told INS is, that I have a permanent job with this employer. If you start doing another job with another employer, are you going away from your permanent job? If you are, you can only do it if you are doing AC21. So, while it is perfectly permissible to work simultaneously on EAD 1099 as well as W-2, you have to keep in mind that you have a permanent job in hand, permanent full-time job in hand. That's a good idea. Okay? So let's look at your situation. Even though I am without job for the last 6 months, the consulting company is paying me regularly, the company that you started yourself. Oh no, this is the other company, because the previous employer. INS is asking for client letters for all new renewals of H1. I'm not planning to apply for H1. Okay. I'm planning to switch over to EAD. That's fine. Got a job offer from a company to work on 1099. You can work on 1099, but you will not be able to get a green card through that 1099. Ultimately, for green card, you need a W-2 job. So if in the meantime, temporarily, you want to do this, this is fine. Next question, Mickey1234. Thanks for the opportunity. We are a group of physicians. Well, this is a strange problem, Doc, but I don't think it's the end of the world. What happened with these folks was, they are a group of physicians. They did a talk individually, and then they got some checks, $500 to $1,000 with a 1099, and some of them answered some online surveys and received a gift card. You see, the problem here is this. There is something called de minimis violations. These violations are so small that INS should not consider them to be major. I know that in academia, INS has said at various times, I think they have, that they will permit people like professors, even though they are on H1 with one university, to go for a lecture tour, and if they get paid a couple of $1,000, that's not a big deal. INS will ignore that. So while overall I think it's going to be fine, I would be a lot more comfortable if a letter were to be sent to USCIS explaining the situation and asking them to advise you whether you need to do something to regularize your status. Another very simple thing you can do is, assuming the worst that your status is gone, you can step outside USA, get a new visa stamp, and come back on H-1 again. Okay? So, I don't think it's a problem. Second, if it is a problem, we can send a letter to the USCIS asking for an advisory opinion. We'll probably never get it, but at least it's that way you have told the government where you stand. Number three, step outside, get a new visa stamp, and come back. Okay? So, all these options are open to you. I'm going to open the conference call for a few minutes just on the issues that I have talked about so far. The rest of the questions I'll answer soon after this. Just one second. So, ladies and gentlemen, I am going to ask only people who have posted questions that I have talked about to ask any follow-up questions they have. Go ahead, please. *6. Press *6 to talk with me. No new comments. Yes, sir.
This is Naveen 256.
Yes, Naveen.
Third question. On the MTR, can I still file the appeal, or is there any use of doing that now?
Your question is, if my MTR is denied, can I still file an appeal, right?
Right, right.
I don't know the answer to that question. I'll tell you why I have my doubts. Certainly worth a try. You should certainly file an appeal. I have never seen anything written in law that says an appeal cannot be filed against an MTR. I have never seen anything like that. The problem is this. When you file an appeal against the original decision, the whole decision is open for the appeal.
Uh-huh.
But when you file an appeal against an MTR,
mm-hmm.
is the appeal directed only towards the MTR issues, or is it directed towards the whole case? That is the secret that nobody knows. I would suggest file an appeal. Let's see what Administrative Appeals Office says. I think it's worth it. But in my view, filing an MTR in those circumstances is not a good idea. So in any case, it's been done. So go ahead and try filing an appeal, see what happens.
Okay. Because I had talked to my attorney, and he had, asked if appeal wasn't better, and he had said, no, let's go ahead and do an MTR. And so
either your lawyer knows more law than I do, or he knows less law. It's one of
that's hardly less.
I don't know. Because, remember, one has to be humble simply because law is such a vast field. There is always a chance I'm making a mistake. But I don't see any point in filing an MTR in these cases. Any, not even 0.1% advantage. I only see disadvantages. I don't see any advantage.
Okay. A follow-up question is, is it even worth it? Because I can file an H-1 extension.
It's always worth it. It is always worth it because you have preserved your rights.
Okay.
So you have two options. And in fact, I might ask you to do both. File an appeal. At the same time, file a second I-140. Same company, same job, everything.
I'm no longer employed there. So.
Oh, you can still file the I-140 if the company has the has the intention to hire you and you have the intention to join them.
Okay, okay.
This is an intention-based process, not a fact-based process.
That was confusing because there were two of us from the same company. The other guy also got an RFE. I also got an RFE. His I-140 and 485 got approved. He got the green card, and mine got denied. And I still don't understand.
This is the government for you. By the way, I have a quick question for you. Which area was the I-140 filed from? Geographical area?
Texas Service Center.
No, but where is the job located?
Oklahoma.
Okay. Because there's a very strong ruling, which is right now applicable only to Indiana, Illinois, and I want to say Wisconsin, where the courts in the Seventh Circuit has literally, the ruling just came out 15 days ago. Courts have blown away INS's methodology of looking at tax returns to determine ability to pay wages. I was thrilled to see that decision. because INS has made such a mockery out of this process. And the court said this is nonsense. You don't look at tax returns. Tax returns, people do tax planning and they don't pay taxes.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is perfectly legal. Don't look at taxable income. Look at economic income. These are two different things. And that is a very strong ruling. I love it. One day I hope I get to see a ruling like that coming out of all the other circuits as well. But right now, if you are in Wisconsin, Indiana, Illinois, these three areas, you might have a better shot of winning on these issues. But even now, I mean, if you take the same arguments that were made in that case, you might be able to get that case at least looked at again. You should go ahead and file the I-140 again, sir, if the employer is willing to do that.
Yeah, they're willing. You know, they have been in business long enough. They have never not paid anybody.
I saw that, and this is amazing that this company has the same number of employees even through all the thick and thin.
Oh, yeah.
Which is very cool, and I think, you know, definitely you should file an appeal.
Is there any way we
can file an appeal?
Okay. Is there any way we can use the gross salary instead of the, you know, the W-2? Because the W-2 shows all my deductions and all that. The gross might be a little higher.
I can't. I wish I had the time to get into all the details of what you can do. Talk to the employer. See what they suggest. I would certainly do both these things. That would be my recommendation.
One last question is, would you have any, or can you point me the website on those cases so we can quote it in our appeal, the Indiana Wisconsin?
Give me a second. Do you have a piece of paper handy somewhere?
Yes, I do.
I'll give you the name of the case right now. It is a Seventh Circuit decision.
Okay.
Let me look for it. Give me one second. I have so much material. I am such a nerd. I spend half my life reading.
Yeah.
It is just, you know, I have so much material. I have tons of research. Give me one second.
Okay.
Right now I have 28,000 documents just in the immigration folder.
Holy cow.
So you can imagine. Give me one second. So I have to come up with some very, very good way of... Here we go. Seventh Circuit case. The name of the case is Construction and Design Company. Construction and Design Company.
Okay.
Versus USCIS.
Okay.
And it was decided by Robert M. Dow.
Okay.
Judge. And it was decided on April 21st, 2009.
Okay.
You should be able to get this case. Nice, nice ruling. I like it.
Okay.
Very nice ruling. Actually, a lot of people should be using it.
Yeah, I really appreciate your help. I was going to ask you, do take up the case, but then I heard you say it will cost like $4,000 to $5,000.
Oh, yeah. We are not cheap because we take time on our cases. You see, the thing is, you can do it cheap or you can do it right. If you spend time on the cases, then it costs money.
Yeah.
So $5,000 was for that guy whose wife was out of status. I don't know what we charge for I-140s and all. You can send an email through the contact us form.
Okay.
We'll be happy to quote your fees. I don't know off the top of my head what we charge for these things. But it's not going to be cheap. It's going to be in that neighborhood. I know that.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
I really appreciate that, Mr. Kamal.
Anytime. Good luck.
Hi. Hi, Raj.
Thank you.
This is
my pleasure. So hang on one second. Yes, sir. I heard a couple of people say hi. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Sai again.
Yeah, Sai, I have spent enough time with you. You're going to have to take the back seat. If I have time at the end of the
one word case, I want to ask you.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah, in the second question, I written as MTR, but I just checked it. The receipt shows as notice of appeal to the commissioner. So,
very
do
good.
Need an appeal?
Yeah, that means it is an appeal. Then your lawyer is a smart guy. Congratulate him. Shake his hand.
Okay.
So because that's what I would have done.
Okay,
appeal
so
is the right thing.
So, that appeal, again, is my H1. So, I'm still, if appeal is pending, so I'm in legal status, right?
Appeal never gives you any legal status.
Oh, okay.
Ever.
Better to file. Okay, thank you very
okay,
much.
Okay, good luck.
Thank
you.
Hello, Rajiv.
Yes, sir.
Rajiv, this is Chris calling from Canada.
Yes, sir.
Will you move on to the next, you know, I'm in number 16.
What is your question? Just give me one second. Since you're calling from Canada, let me see what I can do for you.
Yeah, my...
Your green card was filed 10 years ago. I remember that. Now, here is the funny thing, Chris.
Yeah.
I read your case. The funny thing is, theoretically, an I-140, once approved, is good forever.
Okay.
So it doesn't ever go away. But you might have to prove that if you come into USA You will work in your own area of expertise.
Which I'm still doing. I'm still working in the same area.
Okay.
In Canada for the past 10 years.
Your question was, should I go for consular processing, do a TN, and then do consular processing? Remember one thing. TN and green card don't fit together.
I know. So that's
why.
You
try to come on a TN, and you have to tell them that you have an immigrant visa approved. They can stop you from coming in.
Oh, okay. So let me ask you this. Because you stopped at number 14, are you going to continue to 15, 16?
No, I'm going to finish your question now. So if you, I don't have a whole lot of time. I can't spend time going over all your options. But I can tell you the general rules.
Yeah.
General rule number one is I-140 is good forever. General rule number two, TN and green card don't go together. H-1 and green card go beautifully together.
Yeah, I know. And but since that I-140 approval notice, I did not do anything. That means, like, I moved to Canada. I didn't notify.
So what?
Immigration office, my new address.
So what? I think there's a very strong argument for you that your NIW is still good.
Okay.
And you should not have to prepare tons of documents.
Because for me, the main approach is that either I just stay in Canada, go through consular processing, or I go back to get a U.S. and find a job and work on TN visa or H-1 visa.
Only one thing that would bother me, Chris. When your initial NIW was given, was it given based upon your ability or based upon the work that you were doing in U.S.?
Based upon the work and my skill set, my qualifications.
Okay, sometimes what happens is it is not that you deserve the NIW. Of course, you have to deserve it, but it is also the work you are doing. And sometimes it can happen that that work doesn't exist anymore. For example, you were working on a military contract, and that contract is gone. Then you may not be able to, INS can reopen the NIW and deny it.
Okay.
But if your work was, for example, I had a client from Canada, like you. He was a Burmese citizen. I'm not sure where you are from, but he was from Burma and Myanmar. And his expertise was he had created a packaging, packaging for food, like Coke. You could drink the Coke and then eat the can. Okay? Now, this was patented, and he's been trying to market that. But the idea is, now, this was unique because he had created it, and this was good forever. This was his patent. Well, not forever, but at least for, X number of years. So the point is, his I-140 doesn't go away even if he comes back after 8 years. But somebody like you, if you got your NIW because of a specific work, then you will not be able to come back.
Not really. I think it's just based upon my skill set.
If it was based upon your skill set, your safest thing to do is see if you can get a job offer in USA in your own area.
Yeah.
And do consular processing. Easiest thing.
Okay, so you mean like go back to U.S., work on TN visa. And
you don't have to come to USA. Just get a job offer. Company here says, we'll hire Chris when he comes in. You start your
process. That's tough. That's very difficult because nowadays, most of the companies, if they hire me, they want me to come on board right away.
Then you should come on H-1, not TN.
So H-1 is also tough, because every year, and if filing started on April and then effective in October, no company can wait for half a year. Half a year.
But right now, quota is still available.
I know. Right now, the quota is still available. I'm still making such effort. And so, but for TN, it's easier, And so, if I say just to go back to U.S., work on TN, and then can I file 485?
Only problem is, if you file TN, if you come on TN, first of all, you have to tell them that you have a green card approved.
Oh, I have to tell them.
Because from what I remember, the forms that you fill out at the border ask you that question.
Oh, ask me that question, I see. So that means if I disclose that information, they wouldn't give me TN.
Exactly, and if you don't disclose it, you are guilty of perjury. You can be barred from coming into USA forever.
So you think right now the best approach is for me just to take A approach, stay in Canada and go through consular process.
I think that's the safest thing. It doesn't interrupt your life.
Right. And also makes things easier. And once I get a U.S. green card, I can just cross border. It's much easier.
That's right.
But it's also tough to get a U.S. job offer who can wait for me to come on board like a year later or half year later.
Correct.
That's
fine, sir.
Tough.
I'm going to have to let you go because I have other people who are also waiting. But this is how it would be done. So good luck.
Let me ask you this. If the council
I
prevents fails,
I have to go
have any negative effects on my
future? Chris, I'm going to have to interrupt you. I have to go on, okay? Good luck.
All right,
folks. There was anybody else who had a question before I go on to the rest of the questions?
Mr. Khanna?
Yes, sir.
This is Naveen 256. I had a quick follow-up question.
Okay.
If I file a new I-140 through the new new company, I'm not able to carry over the old one since the decision is, it was denied. It'll be pending even if I appeal. Doesn't that affect the new one in terms of retaining the priority date?
Priority date can only be retained if the old I-140 was approved.
So if it is not approved, then how do I apply for the new one and still try to capture that old date?
You can't capture the old date until the I-140 is approved. As simple as that. Can't do it.
So I just apply for the new one and attach a cover letter that says, the old one is pending.
No, you can't do any of that. Just get the I-140 approval for the new one.
Oh, okay. So there is no point in doing the old one if I can't capture the date, is there?
If it gets approved, then you can always capture the date later, even though the I-140 for the second one is approved. No problem.
Oh, okay. That clarifies.
Yeah. It's not like a deadline date. You've got to get the first I-140 approved before the second I-140 gets approved. No such thing.
Okay.
If the old I-140 is pending or denied in appeal, whatever, doesn't matter. Next I-140 is approved. 6 months later, the old I-140 gets approved. Go back to INS and say, hey, I deserve the old priority date. Give it to me.
Oh, okay.
I
waited in the hope that I could do that, and the new company is in the same boat, so we have got to figure out a way to...
No. Go this way. Okay?
Okay, thanks.
Good luck, sir. Anybody else, folks, before I go back to other questions? All right. We are back to answering the rest of the questions. Okay, what did I do with the questions? Travel on advance parole while awaiting AOS. Okay, this question here is this. I think I read this question. Larita wants to know, if I am outside USA, in the meantime my AOS gets approved, can I re-enter? The answer is yes. I've had this happen to several clients, at least 4 or 5. And the way it works is they come back on advance parole at the airport. They might be detained for an hour, 2 hours extra. USCIS checks your records. They have all the approvals on their computers, and they will let you in back into the United States. And usually, from what I recall, they actually stamp your passport for green card approved right there at the airport itself. I could be wrong about this part, but they do let you in. I know that for sure. Chris, questions I have already discussed. Then next question is... Malavika Nambiar. Filed EP2 I-140 with company A. The I-140 was filed on the old labor, not the new form. Okay. Also filed I-45. I-140 got denied, unavailable documents, USCIS misplaced documents, then denied the I-140. There is an appeal pending. Now, you're saying put in an application to reopen. I think if it's AAO, then it's an appeal. I filed an EB3 perm with the same company. The perm just got approved. I don't want to mess up my status by messing with my new I-140. Since my I-140 is still pending, can I file another I-140? This is a very, very tough situation. See, first of all, I'll tell you what my biggest problem with your situation is. My biggest problem is when an employee files two cases with the same company, one claiming EB2, hang on 1 second, let me get a drink of water. So, an employee files two cases with the same company. One saying EB3, one saying EB2. If I am INS, first thing I want to know is, how come this company has two jobs for you? I mean, of course, it's possible, but you've got to have a good, true explanation for it. Whenever I have a situation like this, I get worried, okay? So it is very difficult to advise you with any degree of accuracy without knowing what the two jobs are, what the circumstances were, how come the company is offering you two different jobs. If all that is in order, okay, then there is no doubt that an I-140 must be filed for the EB-3 application. Okay. I think you should file the EB-3 I-140 because there is no guarantee about what is going to happen to the EB-2 I-140. Next question is, can I put this on top of the old 485? And the answer is probably not. Nobody quite knows. USCIS at one point had said, if we have denied the I-140, we will not accept any other application on top of that 485. If the appeal is won, of course you can do all that, but then you won't need to do that because you have an EB-2 I-140 of an earlier date. But the idea is that is uncertain. It should be double-checked with the USCIS. If you can use the same 485, great. If you cannot, that's okay. Okay? And part of the reason why you won't be able to use it is because of the priority date issue also. Because the EB-3 case priority date is much newer. So I have very grave doubts that you can use that 485. But I think if everything is legal and lawful, you should be able to file and you should file the second I-140. Next question from Bob Basic 2002. He says, second AOS in different category. Applied for AOS in July, August 2007. Received EAD. Currently on H-1, working full-time with VC sponsoring company, also working part-time with a friend's company, and making a significant amount of money. Can I apply another AOS with this consulting company in EB-1 category? Well, first of all, you need to study EB-1 category more carefully. Just because you are making a lot of money doesn't mean you're automatically eligible to receive an EB-1 ruling. Okay. If you are, for a moment, let's assume that you are qualified for EB-1 category. If you are, you can, and I would definitely advise you to file an AOS or at least get the I-140 approval and then interfile that I-140 on top of the pending 485. You can do that. You can knock off the old I-140 and put the EB-1 I-140 on top of it instead of filing the second AOS. But you can. I have done multiple AOSs for the same individual. INS has said they don't like it. Well, but you know, that's tough. As long as it is legal and it gives my client an advantage, I will do it. So the proper way may be to get an EB-1 approval if you qualify. Once the approval comes in, then just to put that on top of the existing 485. That's called interfiling. You don't want to do that. You can try doing the concurrent filing as well. Next question is S.U. Varney. Conversion of pending EB-3 case to EB-2. I have EB-3 485 pending, got converted from EB-3 to EB-2. Okay, now the question is, has my case been updated? There is no way to know about this. And I think your lawyer is right. You have to wait until the priority date is current. But you can at least try making inquiries through the congressional office, a congressman's office, or through ALA to see if they can figure it out for you. Okay? I would certainly recommend a congressman's office. Very, very important. Maruksa, I apologize in the beginning. I don't do DV cases, so I don't know what the answer is. Sri Ram, I-45 RFE. I got my labor certification EB-3 I-140 filed from Company X. Then I resigned that company before the I-140 was approved, joined another company, Y. After joining Y, the I-140 got approved. Using employment offer letter given by Company X, I filed a 485. On the biographic form, I indicated I'm working with Company Y, but attached a job offer from Company X. You received an RFE saying explain the discrepancy. Well, you can use AC-21. You can also base your argument on the fact that it's a future job and you intend to work on that job. Okay? Now, the question whether your job qualifies for AC-21 or not is a very specific fact-bound question. And I don't like to play games with the government. I like to be truthful. Okay? programmer/manager, all that, I don't think that's a good thing to do. Have your case evaluated. Your lawyer can take a look at it. If it works for AC21, go for it. Also evaluate whether you can make an argument that this is a future job. Next question, user_local. I heard about the recent pre-adjudication by MSC. I received an RFE, sent them a response for employment verification letter. Okay. Does that mean that AC21 has been accepted? Well, you know, AC21 doesn't get accepted. You never get any formal notification. Okay. You don't. But if you responded to the RFE and, you know, it looks to me like they've received the letter, whether they are going to accept it or not, I can't say, and nobody can tell you that. Last question today is Willie GC. My PD is July 2003, PD2. Case is pending in Texas Service Center. Applied for 45 on August 7, 2007. I-140 was approved December 2008. I don't have a copy of my LCA. I think you mean labor certification. I have a copy of my approved I-140. If I try to invoke, what do I do? You should, as I have said this in many, many conference calls, at least apply for Privacy Act request. Go to the INS form section and look for Privacy Act or FOIA, F-O-I-A, Freedom of Information Act. Look for these. There's a form for it. File that. They usually give you, INS is required to give you copies of all the documents they have on you. They often give you copies of the labor cert as a part of this process. You can also ask a lawyer to give you a copy of your labor certification. In many states, by state law, lawyers are required to give a copy to protect the interests of the private clients, individual clients. Like in Virginia, that's the law. I have to give you a copy because I represent both sides. So just keep that in mind. Now I'm going to open the call to only those folks who have posted a question. Today I don't have time to answer new questions. So only those folks who have posted their questions would be able to talk with me now. Just give me 1 second.
Hello,
press star 6 to talk with me, please. Star 6.
Yeah, Rajiv?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. You're making me feel bad. How come, why you skip my case scenario?
Who are you?
Chris, calling from
Chris,
Canada.
I have a limited amount of time for everybody.
I know,
okay, but
I have given you
direction on what you need to
do.
I'm not going to argue.
I didn't know that. That was just like replacing you go over my post.
I already answered whatever I can answer for you. We cannot
discuss this. Okay, just one question. If my consular processing fails, can I still start I-485 if I go back to U.S., work on H-1B visa?
That depends upon why the consular processing fails. But if the consular processing fails for some consular reasons, no problem. But if it fails because they reopen and deny your I-140, then you've got a different set of problems.
So if that fails, I still have a chance to file 485.
Absolutely. No problem.
Oh.
Okay?
Okay.
I'm going to have to go on. Next question, please, folks. Anybody else has put press star 6 to talk with me? Star 6.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Vijay.
Yes, Vijay.
I haven't posted the question, though.
Nope. You're going to have to wait.
Okay. I will wait.
Yeah. I don't know if I have enough time, but I'll try. Anybody else?
Mr. Khanna, this is Naveen. If nobody else is asking, I have another question.
You are also at the bottom. Hang on 1 second. Anybody else, folks?
If my consular processing fails,
you are definitely not going to get any more answers from me today.
Does it affect my TM?
Okay.
Visa.
Anybody else except Chris? All right. Chris, stay on the phone. If I have a couple of minutes, I'll give you the answers. I've got 3 people before you. Naveen, you go ahead first.
All I was going to ask was, when I file with the parent company, we are in the same boat, and the net income they show close to zero, and they have not paid the prevailing wage. So, what is the best approach you would suggest?
Very difficult for me to answer that question. Off the top of my head, the best approach is look at the current assets.
Okay.
If they have enough current assets or something that can be converted to cash, maybe that's one approach. See, these are very fact-bound questions. They can't be answered in a vacuum.
Okay. Okay, well, I was going to say the gross is appropriate, but if I just look at W-2, it doesn't show that.
No, they look at taxable income. INS has become very, very strange in this regard. They only look at taxable income or current assets.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's all I had. Thanks.
Good luck.
Rajiv,
this is Vijay. You're next.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Rajiv. I hope you're doing well. Yeah, my company advertised for two positions. One is for software engineer, which is my colleague, and another is quality process engineer. This is for labor certification. For the position, if my position requires master's degree and my colleague's position requires bachelor's degree. So they posted online ad in the newspaper that shows bachelor's degree as the requirement, and underneath that they mentioned the advertisement that the job codes for two positions, for master's and as well as for bachelor's. And my employer says that interested candidates will go to our company's website and enter job code they are interested in. Are they supposed to post the two different online ads for two different positions?
Hang on one second. Let me, again, this is a very, very, very fact-bound question, but I'll give you the general guidelines. Guideline number one, an ad must contain the following information. Full name of the company, job title, and the place where the job is. Okay?
Okay.
These three things, the first two must be, and the third, I think, should be in the ad. Okay? Now, other than that, whether the ad gives a website to apply to, or it asks for degrees or doesn't ask for degrees, as long as it is not misleading, it should be acceptable.
Because it says that Bachelor of Science, and it says 0 to 1 year experience, and underneath that, that is the actual, it's like a picture. It's like a picture they posted online. And underneath that, they wrote a couple of lines that says that if you're interested for quality process engineers, job code 1234, and for software engineers, 3456, please go to our company.
Hang on one second. Folks, everybody who's on the phone, I'm not going to be able to answer any more questions. This is the last set of questions. So anybody else who's hoping for something else, I'm not going to be able to do it today, maybe in a couple of weeks. So hang up now. All right, Vijay, this ad, is this an online ad or is this a newspaper ad?
Actually, it's really confusing because I asked them, they said it's a newspaper. It's they posted on a newspaper. When I click on that, it goes to the online. I believe it's online, not the actual hard copy of newspaper. It's online ad.
See, there is a lot of leeway in ads, what you can and cannot put. In the newspaper ad, all these things must exist. In the online ad, you can pretty much put just a job title. Nobody cares. As long as the ad is not misleading, you'll be okay.
So, yeah, because the lower position, it says Bachelor's of Science, because I'm really worried that they should have put master's degree required and then put the job code. But so what happened is they just put the Bachelor of Science, but underneath it says that if you're interested for the first position, you have to go to our website. So.
It's a little tough for me to, I'm trying to visualize what is going on here, but I can't find a form a picture in my head. I think here are the questions you need to ask. You have a lawyer representing you?
Yes, sir.
You ask them, and preferably in an email. Say, folks, look, I'm concerned about this ad being acceptable.
Okay.
To your knowledge, is this ad acceptable? Get a response in writing. And if they say it's legally acceptable, sit tight and wait.
Okay.
Because the laws are a little complex, and your lawyers hopefully know more law than you do. You shouldn't have to worry so much about your case since you already have a lawyer. If you didn't have a lawyer, I would say, yeah, maybe you need to worry. You got somebody, you know. Look, LCAs, labor certifications, these are not rocket science. If somebody has spent some time understanding what the law requires, they should be able to do it fairly competently.
Okay.
Therefore,
thanks a lot.
I wouldn't worry, but I would get a response from my lawyers in writing.
Okay, definitely.
Okay.
And Raju, one last question. Actually, I had one last question, Raju.
Yeah.
My company is planning to file for labor certification, which we are talking about. And after my 6 years will be completed in September 2010. So, and after I get my H-1B extension with this company, will I be able to take this extension, go to another company, Company B, and start my green card processing with Company B using the H-1B extension?
Only if they don't revoke your labor certification.
Only if my current company does not revoke my... Okay. And
if you withdraw the labor certification, it becomes a problem.
Okay. And when can I file for my H-1B extension before my H-1B visa completes 6 years?
6 months ahead of the expiration.
Okay. No, and my company B has actually, I work for company A. I still have valid visa till September 2009. So if I go back to my company A, can I just use my old H-1B without filing transfer of H-1B with company A?
It's a very tricky situation. I would not want to give you an answer off the top of my head. There are several variables. First of all, company A is required by law to withdraw the H-1 if you have left them. So, but
okay.
As far as general law is concerned, before this particular requirement of withdrawal came into picture, INS used to say, it's okay for somebody like you to go right back without any approval. In your case, worst case scenario, do you have an H-1 visa stamp on your passport?
No, sir, actually not. I have F-1, not
H-1. I think this is, again, a situation where I can't give you an answer in the 10 minutes that I have. But what you can do is please talk to your lawyers. You have lawyers. Talk to them. Explain to them that you want to go back. And if possible, get something in writing. A small response in email, that'd be fine.
So in writing, you mean to say that if something happens, how can
at
I
least,
use that writing?
At least you are protected from a claim of willful violation. There is such a thing as willful violation, where you knowingly disobey the law. If you are acting upon advice of a lawyer, then obviously you are not a lawyer. You cannot willfully disobey a law that you don't know about. It's your lawyer who is supposed to know the law, not you. So it is not a great defense, but it's a good defense.
So you said protected from willful something?
Willful violation.
Okay, thanks a lot, Raju. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Gentlemen,
okay, I really do have to go. Somebody else was saying something?
Hello, Rajiv.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, it makes me very disappointed.
I'm very sorry, sir. I will try to live with that disappointment. I wish you the very best of luck. Thank you, everybody.
Just give it to my post.